Hello, welcome to Shelf Respect, the book podcast focused on both craft and chaos of fiction. I'm Knox McCoy. Joining me as always, she just got cast on Dancing with the Stars. It's Jimmy Golden. Were there any surprises? I didn't see any surprises.
No, it was other than Jenna Dewan got with Val? I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
With the best dancer. So it felt
that
like
seems,
cheating
that's
a little
not
bit.
Fair.
Feels cheating a little
fair.
Bit.
Yeah, I didn't like that. Well, in this episode, we're not going to be talking Dancing with the Stars. We are going to be talking about, I don't know how else to explain this. I'm going to explain it later, but just go with me. We're going to talk about chore books, whore books, and score books. Don't worry, it'll be fine.
Okay, but before we do that, did you know we have a fantastic master list of the best 233 nonfiction audiobooks curated by our Patreon community of hardbacks? And you can snag it this week for free by heading to the link in the show notes. We sorted these recs into multiple easy, super easy to understand categories like The Body is a Weird Wonderland, Women Be Trying, Singers Live Lives Too, Normal Person, Great Writing, Mother Nature is a B word, History But Make It Riveting, and my personal favorite, Cults Never Work Out Unless You're Tom Cruise. So these, you can get all of these books. We have their Goodreads score. We have their genre. It's such a great list. I've been slowly working through it, and every book that has been recommended has been a banger. And again, we drop the link in the show notes.
Okay, we're excited to be here. Jamie, it's not just you and I, so everyone can have a deep sigh of relief. We are joined by a very special guest. Do you want to introduce her right now?
I would. So sitting in for Erin in this episode is our beloved Kendra Adachi. Now, Kendra Adachi, the through line is she is a three-time New York Times bestselling author, which is more times than me and not
and me
to be honest.
And combined more than
combined,
us combined.
That's yeah. Right. And she is a nationally ranked podcaster of the podcast The Lazy Genius. Her favorite things, this was from your website, can I read it? My favorite things include birds, which let me tell you, get
still
on a
true.
Voxer with Kendra and she sees a bird, she has lost the plot. Okay,
yeah.
Books, Oxford Shoes, and James McAvoy. I got the
still true
of still
first,
true. I got
first.
The pleasure of being with her once when she got to see him perform in a play, and it was stunning. She was different after.
It was so a spiritual experience.
It was a spiritual experience. She lives with her husband of 20 plus years and her three kids in Greensboro, North Carolina. And the way we've known Kendra for over a decade. It started with her sending me an email in January 2016 where the subject line was friendship application. This doesn't work anymore because I don't read my email. But she sent an email and made a strong case, bullet points, bolded, examples, hyperlinks of why she and I would be great friends because she had just started listening to the podcast because some friends had recommended it. And she was like, I like you and Knox. I think we should all be friends. And by God, we did it. And we became friends. Even though she did was like, even though we might not have the exact same taste in everything, that's a line. Mm-hmm. And I was like, she's listened to two episodes and she's already clocked us as different.
Important caveat. Yeah, it was an important
caveat. Yeah, it was an important caveat. So we are honored to have Kendra with us this week. All the links for everything Kendra are in the show notes. You must subscribe, download, follow. Look up how much mortgage she has left on her house. Actually, I don't think you do, actually. But I've looked it up. I don't think she's good. She's financially making good choices with the ways that you support her. So thank
your
you for
work
being
with,
here, Kendra.
Your work with Zillow is just really something.
Mm. It's really, it's impressive how much public data is out there about everyone.
It's fair.
So
it's fair.
Be safe on them streets. So.
We should partner with them. Came you close to the pin or Zillow, like celebrity house value, like that should be an aspect.
Like how much mortgage does Jennifer Garner have on that house?
That's right.
Yeah, I think that'd be wonderful. Well, Kendra, we're so excited you're with us. And I mentioned at the top, we're going to be talking chores, whores, and score books. I will explain that now. And as I do, Kendra, your last warning that whore could be a door if you want it. So just think on it as we talk. You have that option as the guest. We are going to be going through, each of us have selected a book that we think is a chore, meaning it's an objectively successful, a popular book that we just felt it was a chore to get through. We're going to pick a book we are a whore for or door. And it's an unpopular book with a Goodreads score, maybe under 3.75 that we actually really enjoyed. And then we're going to talk about a score book, which is something backlist. We're going to say 10 years or older that we feel is underrated and should be considered a score for anybody's to be read list. So Kendra, final answer, whore or adore? What do you think?
I would never change you. So okay. we're going to keep whore. It's great.
I appreciate someone coming into space just be like, this isn't about me. I'm acclimating.
It's not about me. Weird, no.
Yeah. I'm descending to hell. Let's and I'm just go. Accepting hell for what it is. Yeah. So I'm excited for this conversation. I don't know what you guys have planned. I've got some spicy ones that we'll talk about. But Jamie, would you like to kick us off here?
Okay. So with my chore, look, Shelf Respect listeners know that I have a lot of chores. The correspondent, Throne of Glass, sorry, Where the Crawdads Sing. Now, listen, do these books get better later? No, they are all DNFs. Do they get better if you explain to me why you love them so much? Also, no, they do not get better. But I was thinking, what is a book where I literally was like, my expectations were so high and I was disappointed in ways that were unparalleled? And that is the book Divergent, the debut novel by Veronica Roth.
Oh, no.
But let me tell you why. This was written in 2011. I know exactly when I read it, which was in 2014. I think I talked about it in the early days of the podcast, our pop culture podcast, because I was so angry at this book. Now, for those who don't know, have y'all read Divergent, the book?
More than once.
Yeah. I haven't, because I remember the author being like, I think I can figure out this like YA dystopia thing and I can shard out like a bestseller and we're going to see if I do it. And she did it.
So she
I
did. Like, well,
she freaking did it.
I don't think
it.
I want to read a shard, you know?
Now, listen, I read this book after I saw the movie because I freaking loved the movie. How do you not love Theo James in a black tight tee? You have to, right? So I was like, oh, I bet the book is even better. And so this is set in post-apocalyptic Chicago. Obviously, we're all going to the snowy winter and brutal heat of Chicago when the world is ending. Okay. And so everyone in this post-apocalyptic world they're defined by their social and personality related affiliation with one of five love languages. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's the Dauntless, the Amity, the Erudite, the abnegation.
There you
and
go.
The Xander. Thank you. I know I'm dealing with two English majors. This is difficult. Anyway, and so this is obviously we have our Beatrice, who goes by Triss, the worst in the moment nickname that she tries to create for herself really quick, by the way. Because B was right there, but she's like, no, Triss. I like Triss. And then basically Theo James is 4, who she's going to stoop the crap out of. Okay.
Yes.
And I loved it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But here, why was it successful? Okay. Obviously, it literally won favorite book of the year on Goodreads for 2011.
Wow.
The series sold 32 million. Copies. Within 3 years, Veronica Roth had made $25 million post-tax from this series and from selling the rights for the movies. Now, why did I hate it? Okay, first, I was not prepared. I don't know what I thought, because I guess I had been reading Hunger Games and even, God forbid, Twilight. Mm-hmm. When I opened this and the writing was so simplistic, like real simplistic. And I had no idea. I looked up the Flesh Kincaid reading level for this episode today. It's fifth grade. It's fifth grade.
Wow. Okay.
No kidding.
YA, right? Isn't that the
It is,
genre?
But they have, it's so violent and there's so much sex. I just wasn't prepared for middle schoolers to get that kind of lesson. This book debuted at number 6 on the New York Times children's chapter books. I was like, I'm sorry. What's going on? Have we made it a rated R? Like everybody poops? Like, is that what's happened? I don't know. Anyway, she wrote this in college. Okay. I just don't know many people who are writing in college who are killing it on that first draft.
No.
But she apparently did. The faction system, listen, this faction system, it's like every personality system, and I do mean Enneagram, Myers-Briggs, love languages, DISC. If you spend more than 90 seconds thinking, can a society survive on this model? It won't. Like, it falls apart immediately.
And it doesn't. It doesn't, to be honest. It doesn't survive.
And it doesn't survive. And I get that these factions are meant. I get metaphors for lunchroom cliques. I do get that you're trying to explain how, hey, be yourself and maybe you can be the chosen one. No, there's one. There's only one chosen one. Little Liam in the fifth grade reading this, he's not going to be four. He's going to be one of those a-holes in Erudite, which, by the way, Veronica Roth hates intellectuals so much. I do believe wholeheartedly this was the beginning of the anti-science movement because she's so mean to anyone who thinks. Like, she's like, horrible people. Also, do y'all remember? So, Knox, you won't know this, but this book is so Christian. I was not prepared. And look, as a lover, love Jesus. Big fan. Huge fan. Okay. Followed him
I feel
a butt
time. Coming up. Feel a big old butt coming up. Yeah.
Listen, this novel has, like, well, listen, literally in the postscript of the novel, she says, thank you, God, for your son. Listen, if you thank the son, because rappers don't even thank the son. They just are like, thank you, God. They don't get into the Trinity as much. But when she was like, thank you, God, and for blessing me beyond comprehension.
Rappers,
and
I was like, rappers in the are the rappers in the story? Is that what you're talking about?
Rappers on the Grammy
Just in general.
You know, they think they're accepting they thank God.
Yeah.
They always thank God. Yeah. They always thank God for what you know what I mean?
Sure.
But Veronica is not doing that. And so, but it does have like a lot of, it's kind of post-feminist, which you might imagine I don't love. Look, reading this as a sociology major and a women's studies major, I was like, this is so bad. Did you just, it almost makes me think AI did exist in 2010 at Veronica's college. And she put Hunger Games in there and said, make it different and easier for Olivia at the middle school to read. And that's what it did. So to me, this was such a, I did not like this. And maybe it was my expectations, but it was maybe. Not for me.
Kendra, care to comment? Do you think RFK Jr., this is a formative text for RFK Jr. as he was cheating on his wife in advance of the MAHA movement?
Here's what I do think. I think that I read this the year it came out in 2011. And in 2011, I had a two-year-old and an infant. And all I wanted was a fifth grade reading level and four. Sure. That's all I wanted. Now, were the two follow-up books, Trash and the movies, the worst things you've ever seen? They were they were deeply disappointing. But Divergent itself, I think maybe, even though the five factions, while there are many holes, people...
W-H-O-L-E-S or H-O-L-E-S? Important clarification.
I do think that you can put your, it's like a Hogwarts house. It's like, it's nice to sort of be like, I would be in that one. And it's simple enough and interesting enough that people who are tired of changing diapers just want to disappear too. And so maybe the audience was actually people like me and not the teenagers. And we didn't care about being challenged from a literary standpoint. We just wanted a hot guy to do cool stuff.
And I love to not be challenged in a literary sense. I love it. I love a dragon that's just a dragon and a guy who rides him and then rides that lady. Like, I love it.
That's exactly right.
I guess my real beef is probably I wouldn't have been in a faction. I don't know what happened to the factionless.
Oh, okay.
Because it's, where would you put me? Each of you on the spot. Brave, peaceful, intelligent, selfless, or honest. Maybe honest.
Hold on. I would put you in candor.
Yeah.
What does divergent mean?
You have more than one that you don't belong clearly in one faction, that you are divergent and have.
And you have to be murdered if
which
you're
is
divergent.
Illegal.
You have to be murdered.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's illegal to be divergent. Okay. Yeah. You have to stay in your lane. Yeah. I would definitely put you in candor if I had to.
Right.
I agree with
candor.
Which she
had to add later. Like she said, I had to add candor at the end because I realized, there's like, what do I do with all these losers? And she was like, I guess I'll put them here. Hate them. So,
Jamie. So, just to confirm, you like the movie? Like the movie. You hated
love
the book.
Hated the book.
care to comment? Movie. The Rotten Tomatoes score for Divergent is 41%.
Oh, that's too high. It should be lower.
It should be worse. Okay.
Should be worse. But that's what I'm saying. It's like it's I'm a whore for the movie, but the book was a chore. You know.
Okay.
Like,
you're mixing streams here already.
Shailene Woodley is such a bad Triss. She should have been B. She should have been B because she's so bad as Triss. But Theo James, that's kind of how most of us were introduced to Theo James.
It's true. Okay.
And he imprinted on us whether we had toddlers or we were just a lady in her 30s.
I had to go to counseling because yeah, of four. Did. Because yeah, of Theo James.
Okay, embrace because debate. Is it like, is he too hot? Is Shailene Woodley's a fine Triss, but he's so hot and like masculine, he like overrides what she's able to do. It like it distorts the movie.
They had good chemistry.
They did have good chemistry.
But she's so like, she just flicks her ponytail a lot. And like, you know, looks into corners. And so she's a bit too moody, maybe, sure, to like match him.
She doesn't have actual skills. Whereas like Katniss, skills for days. Skills for days. But unfortunately, so I would say if you're going to, I would skip this and just read Hunger Games. Like,
No one reads Divergent for Triss. You read Divergent for four.
Yeah.
And that's what you do.
So I'm currently taking, there's on Epic Reads, there's a quiz you can take to find out what faction you would be in Divergent. So when I finish that, I'll report back on
I look forward to it.
I love that you think it's not intelligent. Like it's
I was going to say, why would it not be erudite? You should know that right away.
You're erudite. Yeah.
I honestly, listening to those factions is a chore for me. And I can't remember what they were.
And listen, the funny thing is erudite is like librarians. Scientists, pop culture podcasters. So it makes
sense. It says, according to epicreads.com/blogs/news/divergent, I would be in Candor. That's what it says.
Okay.
Kendra, I would put you in Dauntless. Are you in Dauntless? I think you're brave.
That, are you insane? I don't like to go outside. I watch them through a window. Those people have to jump off trains. No.
Wearing Oxford shoes is brave because blisters abound. Like, that's a brave. A pointy toe? No, that's brave.
I have narrow feet. It works just fine. No, I would be either. I mean, I feel like the slow pitch is erudite. But there is part of me that, like, if left to my own devices, Candor all day. Like, let's just move. Yeah. What are we doing?
That's fair.
This episode is sponsored by Quince. You know those pieces in your closet that you reach for over and over again? The sweater that works with everything, the jeans you trust to fit just right, or the bag that you carry everywhere? Well, those are the pieces that earn a permanent place in your wardrobe, and that's exactly what Quince does so well. Quince makes elevated everyday essentials using premium materials like Mongolian cashmere, organic cotton, and washable silk. Their designs are timeless, thoughtfully crafted, and made to be worn again and again. They're 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters start at just $50, giving you the softness and the quality you'd expect from a luxury brand without the luxury price tag. Quince also has premium stretch denim, leather bags and footwear, and beautiful 14 karat gold jewelry that can pull an entire look together. The Quince piece I've reached for most often is the Mongolian cashmere sweater. I know it's still technically summer, but as soon as the season changes to fall later this month, I will begin immediately wearing it. No questions asked, no matter what the temperature is at. That's how much I love it. It's incredibly soft, but it's also easy to wear. I can put it on with jeans, dress it up with trousers, or I can layer it over something when the weather starts to turn. It's become one of those pieces I grab whenever I want to look pulled together without having to overthink it, and it's one I genuinely recommend. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just apparel. Quince brings that same approach to hotel quality bedding and bath, kitchen essentials, and thoughtfully designed furniture, well-designed pieces for everyday living. Find the fall pieces you'll reach for most at Quince. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/shelf. Get free shipping on your order and 365 day returns, now available in Canada and the UK too. So that's Quince, quince.com/shelf.
This episode is sponsored by Timeline. For years, women were taught that exfoliation had to sting, burn, or leave skin peeling to be effective. But as skin changes with age, stronger isn't always smarter. Effective exfoliation should refine skin while respecting the skin barrier. Timeline is a Swiss-born longevity company with more than 18 years of cellular health research. Its MitoPure Resurfacing Exfoliator is a powerful yet gentle leave-on treatment designed to exfoliate, purify pores, improve texture, and support support cellular renewal. Most exfoliators focus only on the surface. Timeline pairs salicylic, mandelic, and lactic acids with MitoPure, its proprietary longevity bioactive, to combine visible resurfacing with cellular renewal support. MitoPure supports mitochondrial function while the three acids resurface and refine skin. It's formulated for all skin types, including, like me, sensitive skin. After my first use, I noticed that my skin felt smoother the next morning. For me, it felt comfortable rather than stripped, which is a big distinction with an exfoliator. After using it consistently for 15 days, I noticed that my skin's texture looked more refined and my makeup went on more evenly. And in a 3-week user trial of women aged 47 to 65, 100% of participants agreed that the exfoliation was effective yet gentle. Timeline is offering a 15-day trial of the MitoPure Resurfacing Exfoliator for just $22. Give it 15 days and see how your skin looks and feels. Go to timeline.com/shelf to try it for $22.
Okay, Kendra, what is your chore pick?
So this was a list. I had so many chore options, surprised by this. But I will actually make it not even a book. It is an author. Oh. And it is, yeah.
Their whole bibliography?
Their whole catalog. And that is one Ann Patchett.
Oh, dang. Oh! Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. She came to play today. That's
is this
candor.
A paywall or is this a free feed episode, Jamie?
I'm sorry. Veronica just put you in candor.
Yeah. No, is this paywall or is this free feed, Jamie?
I don't.
This is free feed.
This is free, free feed.
So
okay.
Gotcha.
I do feel scared about that. No, you guys, I try so hard. I listened to Meryl Streep read me Tom Lake. I listened to Tom Hanks read me Dutch House. I listened to whatever the other blonde lady is read me Commonwealth. Like, I have really tried hard. Bel Canto or whatever has been on my shelf for 10 years. I'm so bored. It's so slow. Yeah. It's just too many people thinking about things.
Oh, yeah.
And then thinking about what they're going to say to the other person who's also thinking about things. And then maybe we're going to go to dinner and not talk about those things. And I'm like, you guys, this book should have been one conversation. What are we even doing? Also, anytime something is like a multi-generational, you know, family epic saga, I'm out. I don't care. About my own family saga enough. Like, I know we're done.
What if you understood? What if you knew that Tom Lake, the lake, was a metaphor?
Oh,
would that help you love it more?
Metaphors are worse. Metaphors make it worse.
Have you done Whistler? Have you tried Whistler?
No, I have not tried Whistler. I have not tried Whistler. No,
the horse. Spoiler: horse is a metaphor.
I'm sure it is. Everything is a metaphor. I just feel like I think there are lots of anything literary. I don't care. I did enough of that in college, and I just want to read about dragons and circuses and murder. Like that's really all it is at this point. Yeah. So when I try to pick up like another book that's on there, was on my list that got cut was Gilead by Marilyn Robinson.
Okay.
I hated that so. I hated it. Like, and so many of my like dearest friends, like their favorite book of all time. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I DNF'd it. Like, I DNF'd it. I couldn't do
it. Oh, it won the Pulitzer. It won
sure
the Pulitzer.
It did. Yeah. That's actually usually, you know how. Okay,
that's how
so,
you know not to read it.
See, here's the thing. I have a few reading decide onces. And one of mine is, if it is nominated for the Pulitzer, I'm not going to like it. Like, I just know already. That it's not for me.
Not for
you.
Because
it's going to be a lot of introspection, probably.
It's too slow, guys.
I mean, Kendra, the world needs less introspection. I think we all can see that that's going to a good place right now, you know?
Now, how do you feel about Ann Patchett, the bookstore owner that lets a dog run around her bookstore?
So I have been to her bookstore. What's the name of her bookstore again?
Parnassus.
I have been, and I enjoyed it, and it was lovely. And I think I don't know anything about her as a person, so I don't want to say I'm sure she's lovely, but I hope that about most people. I'm sure she's lovely.
Madison, and cut all that. I don't want that. I want the hard hot takes from Kendra.
Right. You know, don't buffer it. Stuff. Don't buffer
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Get after her. Kendra.
Yeah, I don't care enough. And I feel bad that I don't care. I want to be a person who likes Ann Patchett novels. And I'm not a person who likes Ann Patchett.
Ann Patchett is a Nepo baby. Her mother was a novelist, a New York Times bestselling author.
Well, that isn't fair. I don't like that. I enjoyed Commonwealth. I love anytime Benadryl can be like a linchpin of a plot. I'm like, that's impressive. I did really enjoy Wesler. The other, I didn't even try Bel Canto. I didn't even try the Dutch House. That couldn't sound more boring to me. So I have no idea if those are good or not.
I read Bel Canto and I liked it, but I liked it better as the TV. Was it a TV show? I think it was a TV show with Julianne Moore. I liked it better.
Was it
really? That way? I didn't know.
Here's the thing. If I can't tell you the difference in all of the Ann Patchett novels that I've read, like that doesn't feel like a win. You know, that doesn't feel like something that I want to put my flag in the sand on. Like I can't tell. I couldn't tell you the plot of any of them. It's like it's families doing hard. They're doing hard things. They're going through some stuff.
Families doing hard
things. And I just don't care about families going through hard things. I mean, I do in real life, but I don't want to read about it. I don't care. I don't care.
Madison, cut that too. I want it hard on. She does. She doesn't like Ann Patchett. She doesn't care about families.
She wants a hard C on that. I don't care.
When Kendra's, I don't disagree with you. What did you say earlier? You want Dragon Circus Murder? I'm like, if it's a book Dragon about Circus families Circus. Doing hard things or Dragon Circus Murder, I know which one I want to buy. It's Dragon Circus Murder. It is, you know? So, Kendra, when you are recommended something or like you see it shortlisted for the Pulitzer or the Booker or whatever, and everyone's like, this is so good, is your base like reptilian brain impulse to be like, no, or like, I'm going to read this and on it, or are you open to that kind of experience?
I've never read this and shit on it. I don't want to voluntarily shit on anything. I don't want to be that person. Usually if enough people, like this happened with a book with Remarkably Bright Creatures. Everybody was like, oh, you'll Octopussy. Love this book. You'll love this book. You'll love this book. And it was, I listened to it because I usually listen to chores because that's the only way I will actually get through them. I just know that. And I listened to it and it's Marin Ireland. She's my favorite audiobook narrator in the whole wide world.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I still hated it.
Okay. Yeah. I think my impulse is to, if everyone's reading something, someone recommends it, I have to really get over my like devil's advocate of like, oh yeah, watch this. I'm going to hate it.
Listen, probably. I do think that's true for you, Kendra. So Kendra has a free newsletter where she talks about all the books she reads in a month. She reads a ton. And there's always a section at the end that's like books you've recommended. And there's always some punctuation that I know is like, that. I'm not reading that. Thanks for that dumb recommendation. You know, it's a vibe. It's a vibe at the end of like, this is a list of the books that you thought I should read that I will never read.
Okay.
If it's on there long enough, I will sometimes maybe give it a chance, but I'm almost always disappointed.
Yeah, it's like the longer something stays on the list, I'm just like, I'm never going to get to this. So why pretend anymore?
Why pretend?
Yeah.
Okay, my chore. I have two picks. I wanted you guys to help me make like the definitive call. So I'll go quick. The first one is one. When I was thinking of this assignment, I was like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, I've been sitting with one for this whole summer, and it's Prince of Tides. It's been like the sword of Damocles like hanging over me of like, you got to finish this monster epic that is complicated because it's great, but it's also too long. It's doing too much. So this is the Pat Conroy book. It's 4.26 stars on Goodreads. It's a 1986 bestseller, was on New York Times list forever, sold millions of copies. There's a movie, Barbra Streisand, Oscar nominations, right? So it's a big deal. It's a big deal book. And I'm trying to like get through the requisite Southern literature, you know, to like be an educated person of the South. And the prose and like the lyricism is incredible, but it's like, it's every sentence. Everything is just like, it's a homily and a metaphor and a meditation. And then it's a next paragraph and it's too much. It's a little trauma. Have either of you read Prince of Tides?
I've only watched the movie.
Watch the movie. Okay.
And I've never read it because the front cover says a big sprawling saga.
It does. Disqualified.
And those are words that I don't use.
Yeah.
I
don't read those words. It's fair. And it should have put in like a big traumatic sprawling Southern saga because it's like physically abusive father, check. Emotionally abusive mother, check. Miscarriages, suicidal twin, dead brother. Pet tiger's kind of cool. He kills bad guys, so he doesn't do anything like shady or anything.
Wait, there's really a pet tiger? That's not a bit. There's really a pet tiger?
I'm gonna blow your mind. They were trying to drum up business for I think a convenience store or a gas station, and they were like, pet tiger will do the trick. And I mean, it would, especially in the South.
But I was going to say, that does feel like a Southern novel, though. That's about right.
Yeah, it tracks. And it's very Southern. Again, the writing is incredible, but it's too much. It's doing too much. So that's one. The other one is I'm halfway through this, and I'm trying to be a diverse reader, trying to expose myself to different things. And I can't tell you how much I hate this. I respect it a little bit, but I hate this so much. And it's a little story called Manacled. Are you guys familiar with this?
Listen, this is the chore of your lifetime. So are you reading Manacled or are you reading Alchemized?
Manacled. Confirmed. Okay. Manacled. I'm hoping it gets better.
No, it won't.
Okay.
It won't.
Okay.
It won't. But people will tell you it will. They're going to tell you it changed their whole lives. Please discuss for the group what Manacled is, Knox.
How could it change your life for the better? This feels like a sentence someone gets. Like, I feel like I'm in Azkaban reading this right now. Like, this is my punishment for something. I wrote down, it's all plot dopamine and alt history fascination, but zero craft. All history, Harry Potter Mad Libs, tedious torture porn, written by Draco Malfoy's PR team. That's pretty much my summary of it so far. I don't know how Draco is suddenly like the most capable person in the Harry Potter universe when he basically like pissed his pants when he was like tasked with
he's hot. Dumbledore. He's hot as an adult. He's hot.
As an adult, I guess. But now he's like Death Eater, Shadow Daddy Supreme, who's great at everything, but also a double agent, I guess. It's outrageously redundant. And I think the biggest problem I have with it is there's some good stuff in here. Like, this could be good if they would just like cut it in half and just like focus on like when Hermione's like in the war flashback, I think.
Yeah.
That was like, right. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know. I think the story vision and the structure is fantastic. The execution is like dog crunch. Like, it's not even fifth grade level. What did you say? The flesh eaters reading level guide or whatever?
How dare you?
It's got to be second grade. It's got to be second grade. It's just like blips of sentences, you know?
Okay. So Kendra, have you ever read Dramione fanfic?
I have read one that you sent me.
Hard Road to Hoe or The Mortifying Ordeal? The Draco Malfoy and The Mortifying Ordeal of Being in Love.
It was the one where they couldn't. They had to touch each other or not touch each other.
Mm.
Like, it was like gold things.
Meet Me at Midnight?
Maybe.
Was it that? It doesn't
I don't
matter.
Know. It Listen, was, yeah, I think that's what I read.
Okay, so Knox, Manacled, here's the problem. So, and this is for everybody listening. It started as a Hermione fanfic on AO3. Mm-hmm. It's gone now. You can't read it because she traditionally published it as Alchemized,
right.
The author, Sinlin Yu. And I, too, thought, you know what? I bet this will get an edit that will absolutely sharpen this up. Mm-hmm. First of all, it has my least favorite trope in it, which is non-consensual. And I love that everybody at the – listen,
no,
I love
but
that
No, but Jamie, it was for good. It was
for good. No, it's for
he
good.
He was cool
she didn't have a
while
choice.
He was raping her. Right. But she just didn't know. So,
So everybody who loves Manacled, don't forget – it's non-consensual. It doesn't matter how the book ends. It doesn't matter how the book ends. She doesn't know that it's consensual in some weird way. Anyway, this got traditionally published as Alchemized. I love that when I got an arc of Alchemized, both Aaron and I were so excited because we were like, I bet they're going to clean this up. And I don't know if y'all have heard of editors who just like change one word and go, you did it. Like, that was great. That's bad editing. That's exactly what happened here because Alchemized is 1,000 pages. 1,000 pages.
What are you talking about?
1,030 pages.
That's three very long books.
And I made it to like 60. I made it to like 69%. But I was like.
Nice.
But I was so angry. I was so mad. I don't think Aaron even made it that far. I think Aaron made it to 100 pages, which is only 10%. So like it was brutal. It was brutal. It's. Now, the fun fact is we think we've figured out what famous Christian the author is related to through some sleuthing. If you've
Does
ever
it rhyme
kissed
with Terkhurst, you think?
No, well, if you've ever kissed dating goodbye, you might know who maybe one of her siblings is. Anyway,
it's a hex.
That may not be true. And it doesn't change it, but it's like, I don't know. It actually made him more interesting. I'm like, well, you have a cool sister who's into some weird stuff. But
Yeah.
Anyway, good call. These are
Manacled. Sure. Yeah.
Manacled chore. Yeah. And Prince of Tides, I just want to say the movie was a chore because I was like, that's when I realized, oh, no, I like everyone to be hot if they're going to have sex. Like, and I do not find Barbra Streisand or Nick Nolte to be hot.
I think I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree with you too.
Yeah. No, Nick Nolte was built to be old and grizzled. You know, he wasn't built to be young.
Built to be old. That's so fair.
He was born old and grizzled, and he's aged into it, I believe, now. So, okay, that's my chores. Jamie, do you want to talk about your a book you're a whore for?
Okay, so I realized because of my weird, complex reading system, you know, where I'm like, I have to read every review, and I have to find out if something's good, and I have to know that people loved it, and that Publishers Weekly starred it, like, because I want to read good books. This was actually difficult until I remembered there are two books in my life that I have greenlit on the podcast that I have gotten the most pushback on that to this day startles me. Like, if you don't like these books, I do secretly think you're trash when it comes to reading. And the first one, so the honorable mention is Mexican Gothic by Silvia Moreno Garcia.
I love that book.
I love this book. This book won winner for Reader's Favorite Horror in 2020. It's 3.66 stars. People are like, I don't get it. I don't get it. And I'm like, well, you're dumb. You're dumb. And that's why you don't get it. I get mad about that. But the one that really shocks me, and I will be curious if either of you have read this, but people to this day, like literally last month, somebody said, hey, I was going through your green lights and I read this and it was trash. Why did you recommend Yellowface?
Thanks for reaching out and let me know. I know. That's wonderful.
So the book is Yellowface by R.F. Kuang. This just made the cut for horror because it's 3.72. But it has 1.1 million ratings. A lot of people have read this book. This, for me, is a satirical thriller. So put it in my veins. People love to hate this book because they're like, there's nobody to root for. Well, have you lived any life? Sometimes there's nobody to root for, including you. Okay. So, okay, our authors, we have June and Athena. And Athena is the literary darling. Okay. And June is nobody. And then what happens is June sees Athena die. This is not a spoiler. This is on the back of the book. She sees Athena die. And so she ends up stealing Athena's unfinished masterpiece, her next novel, and decides to present it as her own. And it's about the unsung contributions of Chinese laborers during World War I. The problem is June is not Chinese. And so there's this whole debate. And we talked about it here on Shelf Respect. Whose story is whose to tell and all of that, right? But this book, so I looked for a one-star review. This was my favorite. And I'm not saying they don't make some points, but if the only way you can write a book is by making the characters dumb as a sack of spuds, you shouldn't write a book. The resolution is the protagonist literally thinks she's being confronted by the ghost of her friend. Who among us hasn't thought we saw a ghost once in our house? I don't understand why that's big. This is poorly executed. All the characters are inexplicably wealthy and terminally online. What do you think I'm going to be? If I ever get wealthy, all I'm going to be is on the internet. Are you kidding me? Have you met Elon Musk? And then they say, for all that bullshit, it wasn't even a pleasant read. She must have typed it out while sitting on the toilet. If you enjoy reading Twitter posts or 4chan memes, you might enjoy the, quote, quality prose of this. The writing itself is a McDonald's meal. McNuggets are...
I love McDonald's.
Wow. I love McDonald's. McDonald's is so good. I get it. June is a horrible person. Horrible person. Like, truly, she's a horrible... But that's what I love. June is one of my favorite characters ever because I like when you can have a nuanced villain. But I get that people were like, why would a lady do that to another lady? That can't be right. So I do get the criticism where a reader who's looking for happiness and happily ever afters. But man, my favorite thing, as somebody who's never written a book, and I'm sitting with two people who've written five books, and a half, maybe she's got one coming next year. But the crazy thing is, this is so mean to everyone in the publishing process. It's mean to authors, to agents, to editors, to publishers, to reviewers, to Goodreads. There's a bit about Goodreads reviewers that is so on spot about how you think you're going to get discovered in this Goodreads thread with your well-written review. You think somebody's going to offer you a book deal because of this? You need to shut up. I love it. I love this novel, but I do. A lot of people hate this book. So have either of you read Yellowface? Yes.
I did. Okay. I have read it.
And Kendra, did you hate it?
I just looked it up. I gave it 3.5 stars.
Oh, okay, not okay. bad.
Yeah, I didn't not hate bad. It. No, I didn't hate it. I thought it was good for what it was trying to do. It's not my kind of book. Like, I finished it, and I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but I was like, this is accomplishing what it's trying to accomplish, and I'm also kind of, like, glad it's over. So I would never want to read it again.
Yeah.
But I also – I agree with you. I felt like it came hard for everybody in a really interesting way. It, like, took no prisoners in the industry. And since that's an industry that I work in, I found that really, really fascinating. But I also felt like it was it was an overall, like, I had mean girl energy the whole time. And I needed – yeah, like Knox needs a break from, like, homily and metaphor and prose, as do I, but I also need a break from mean girl energy. And I did find it a little hard to be like, I don't care about anybody here though. Like, there's nothing that's making me feel soft inside. I'm just like, okay. So I gave it 3.5 stars.
It's the, there's part of me that I really relish books that give you no one to root for because I'm impressed. I feel like the degree of difficulty has gone up and it's like, okay, that's why, like, I remained oddly fascinated with Yesteryear. Because I'm like, it's books like these are written. I think so many books are written to, like, I'm going to have this kind of character. I'm going to make this kind of social commentary. And because of that, you're going to give me X amount of Goodreads points because I'm so brave. And meanwhile, I forgot to write anything interesting. I just, like, we just masturbated at each other. So it's like, I haven't read this, but I do find R.F. Kuang. What did you say, Kendra? You were, like, relieved after you were done with this book?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of how I feel reading her stuff. Like, with Babel, I was just like, oh, I'm glad that's over.
Babel was on my chore. Babel was on my chore list.
Babel is a chore because she talks about chalk so much.
So much chalk.
You wouldn't believe it, Jamie.
Wait, Babel or Catharsis?
Jamie, how much chalk talk do you think she does in that book? Times it by five.
Is
whatever
it Babel or Catharsis?
Oh, dang. It's Catabasis. Thank you.
I read Babel.
Fault. Thank you.
I read Babel. And Babel was...
Because Catabasis has, like, a lot of chalk.
Catabasis is the chalk talk. Yes.
Babel has a lot of dust.
It does have a lot of dust.
Oh, my gosh.
I would say R.F. Kuang. I think R.F. Kuang's... for me, the best book is The Poppy War. Here's what I think. I think R.F. Kuang thrives if there's a series, because then she can spread out the chalk and the dust. And it doesn't have to fill up 40% of one book. You know,
yeah,
it's fair.
So. Yeah, I think that's great. That's a good note. Okay, Kendra, a book you are a whore for. I'm sorry to say that.
This was also really hard because of, like, I know what I like. I've been tracking books for a long time. And so I looked back at, like, all my 4 and 5 star reads and then looked like, okay, I had two. In 10 years of tracking, there were only 2 books that are below 3.75 on Goodreads.
Flex.
God, I live under the 3.75.
I was going to say, that's where not. If you want to look for Knox, look at him for 3.75.
I clean up in the dungeons, baby.
So there were only 2. But one of them is like a little bit in the zeitgeist right now. And it is a book called Incidents Around the House by Josh Malerman. It is the horror book that inspired the Jessica Chastain horror movie, Other Mommy.
Oh,
yes. It is in the zeitgeist. Good call.
Yeah. So that's, like, out here right now. And so I figured that the lower rating was just people who didn't like horror. And they were like, this was scary or whatever. Because I loved it. The book is about, it's so creepy, you guys. The narrator is an 8-year-old girl. They have a little girl read the audiobook. It's a horror movie read by a child.
I do not like that. I'm out.
Now, I did not listen to the audio because I'm not going to do that to myself. That's crazy. But it's written from the perspective of an 8-year-old girl. She lives with her mommy and daddo. A lot of people in the reviews didn't like daddo.
Don't either. Don't like it.
So she lives with mommy and daddo, but also in her closet is other mommy. And other mommy does kind of look like her actual mommy, but, like, her legs and arms are in odd places and we're not really sure how her body works. And every day she comes out of the closet and asks Bella, can I go into your heart? And I had a hard time walking past closets for, like, a month. And I'm a lady.
That's a, like, good horror novel.
I fund my own 401k. And it's the scaredest I've ever been.
I watch birds through a window, okay? And I had problems. open closet.
So maybe I'm going to take you out of Dauntless. My bad. Okay.
No, just such a terrible choice. Just because I've gone through trauma doesn't mean I belong in Dauntless. But I loved this book. Now, the ending, you know, the book is basically, how do we get rid of other mommy? Belle is trying to figure out how to get rid of other mommy without making actual mommy and Dado upset, because actual mommy and Dado are millennial parents who are really struggling through marriage and jobs and identity. And you can tell they're having their own little, you know, relationship kerfuffles. And so Belle is feeling like responsible for those things, but she's got to get, you know, she's scared of other mommy, and other mommy is relentless and just keeps hovering over her in bed. Can I come into your heart? Can I come into your heart? And it's not a good time. So the ending was like, I would say it was like satisfying. It wasn't, they didn't stick the landing, but it was like fine. Like the ending was fine. Mm-hmm. But I found the book to be so enjoyable. I still think about it. It's the scariest book I've ever read. Wow. So I look up the reviews.
Yeah.
And so these are a couple. Justin gave it 2 stars. Here's what Justin said. Horror for bored stay-at-home housewives.
Oh,
This sucked. Could have majorly benefited from a 150-page edit. I don't – guys, this book is barely 200 pages, so I don't know what he's expecting.
He wanted a short story.
That's he wanted a short story. Way too long and redundant, and literally nothing happened. Biggest disappointment of the year. So clearly Justin had very high expectations about this book. But then there's another guy named Jay. Jay also gave it 2 stars. Jay says – Jay says, repetitive and slow – neither thrilling or entertaining. He doesn't say neither nor. So I'm going to have to just read it as he said it.
Yeah.
Neither thrilling or entertaining, despite there being 2 antagonists, one non-physical entity and the other an adulteress, this story can't seem to find its footing and pin down which one is worse than the other.
Wow. I feel like that tells us more about Jay than it does
the book. Jay, hey, I get that your wife cheated on you and you're upset about it, but like, do you have to bring that to Goodreads?
Apparently he did. Please. So I love this book. Like anybody who likes horror, I'm like, you want to read the scariest thing you've ever read in your whole life? And I feel like it's a great premise. The fact that it's from the point of view of an 8-year-old girl, there's no punctuation, which I usually hate. But for this, it actually kind of worked because it's just like a little girl. It's almost like a crayon drawing. And I still, 3 days ago, I saw the trailer. Jessica Chastain plays the mommy and other mommy. I was so scared, and it reactivated my closet fear. And I was like, okay, I can do this. I can walk past my closet when I pee in the middle of the night, and other mommy is not going to come for me.
Kendra, did you notice the moment you lost Jamie when you were talking about that there's no punctuation? That was the moment she yeeted her parachute.
How do I know what to skip? How do I know what to skip? I hate all that.
You can't speed read when there's no punctuation.
I have not read this book, but I did read Bird Box. He did Bird Box.
He wrote Bird Box, yes.
And I loved Bird Box.
Yeah, I liked it on Netflix. I didn't read it.
Yeah, I
liked
the book.
The movie was messed up.
And maybe that's why Jay and Justin had high expectations, because they had read Bird Box and they were hoping for a similar reading experience, and they just didn't. They just got an adulteress. So
listen. I just want to say this about Josh. His photo, I can tell, is from 2004, but he's not updated it because it's very filtered, and he's like, hey guys,
it's like sepia.
Sepia. His hands are on his hips. He's wearing a leather jacket, and he does tell you in his bio that he wrote that he's also one of 2 singer-songwriters for the rock band The High Strung. You know, the band we all know.
Yeah,
I love when an author's like, this is just because of my music is my real love.
I'm just like, this is a side quest, y'all. The picture does read like one of the musicians at the bait shop in the OC season 2, you know? And he's just like, he's hitting on Olivia Wilde and Misha Barton, and he's doing songs. And that's right.
Knox, what's your whore?
The book I'm a whore for, this is a lesser known one. I recommended it, greenlit it, loved it. I was stunned when I saw that this was under, like, disqualified. But I didn't want to choose this one because, I think I've talked about it before on the podcast, but it's 0 stars. Do not recommend. It's by MJ Wasmer. And it is White Lotus meets Kevin Wilson. This is from Goodreads. I'm just reading. White Lotus meets Kevin Wilson. It's a social satire about a man who finds himself trapped on an island resort after the sun literally explodes, and suddenly must choose whether to save himself from the chaos or help fellow guests make it off the island alive. There's also an MLM Queen Bee, who is like his rival and antagonist, who's like the boss babe of the resort and like the new version of humanity that has to endure and survive. It's very bantery. It's very talky. It's very dialogue-y. I enjoyed it. It seems like some people do not enjoy it. So that's one I'm a whore for. I wanted to, so that's my placeholder. That's in my pocket, right? I've got okay. that one. I wanted to pitch you guys on a different one that technically doesn't qualify, but I think there's a reason why it doesn't qualify. Okay. This book I'm talking about is a 3.87 on Goodreads, but I believe there's at least a 15 point bump because it's a church book and it's Left Behind, the Left Behind first book by Jerry D. Jenkins.
The church reviewers, they don't even consume the product. They just go, five stars because I love the Lord being featured in things. I love the Lord
I agree. And I'm here. There's a lot to say about Left Behind that deserves disparaging and criticism and its cultural legacy. But I think just as like a cultural artifact, it's incredible. This is a great book.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's like, actually a great agreed. Book.
The so cold cool. open. Genuinely. Like, amazing. It's a 747. People disappearing. The
it's like a T.J. Newman novel. It's so good. Yeah,
exactly. Like exactly. I think Jerry Jenkins, I think he's, it's a little like manacled. These sentences aren't great, but the plot is good. The propulsion is good, right? And you can get away. If you're efficient and your writing is propulsive, you can get away with terrible sentence structure.
That's exactly
it's
right.
when you're redundant and 1,000 pages and your sentences suck. That's when it kind of gets highlighted. I think in terms of, because Jamie, you and I on different episodes have talked about authors and their conversion capability. Like, yeah. can you bring readers in just because of this story you wrote? And I think Left Behind's ability to get Christians to be like, should I read now? Should I be literate? Like, should I read some of this fiction stuff? I think that can't be understated. I think Nikolai Carpathia, excellent villain, incredible villain.
So good.
So good. I think it's also like Left Behind is, I don't know, like a skeleton key to an entire subculture. And if you understand like, whatever, like the 20, 30 years since Left Behind, you have to have read Left Behind to understand like Christian evangelicalism to like really get like what our weird stuff is. And I just think as someone who grew up in the 80s and 90s and was filled with rapture anxiety, to get a book like this, to vindicate all the things I'd been told to worry about, it felt really nice. It was really good.
Listen, the thing about Left Behind that if you ever deconstruct, which I highly recommend some element of deconstruction just for the inventory of it all. But if you ever deconstruct, it's realizing like, oh, Rayford, is he bad? Like he's a bad guy, like a little bit. And you somehow are like, would I be friends with Nikolai Carpathia? I might. Like I might. I mean, he probably throws great parties at the very
He probably throws great parties.
He probably throws, you know. But, and I highly recommend if you're looking for the adaptation, the one you're wanting is the Nick Cage. You do want not the Kirk Cameron.
Not the Kirk Cameron one.
You want the Nick Cage.
That one's scared. Nick Cage is fearless. He's dauntless, some would say.
He's dauntless. He's absolutely dauntless.
Knox, when I was a kid, I used to play Rapture.
Okay.
Yeah, you would.
Very healthy. Yeah.
That's what my friend and I called it on a stormy, cloudy day.
Walk us through it. What happens in Rapture, the game?
So the weather is a real big indicator of how Rapture, it's not an effective game if it's not sort of windy and overcast.
Okay. Sure.
So if the weather was right, my friend Crystal and I would go outside and we're like, let's play Rapture. And we would be playing in the yard. And then one of us, it was like being it in tag. And whoever was it would be like, oh, I hear trumpets.
No. No. Horses? Did you see a horse?
Have you thought about franchising this game idea, Kendra? Because it sounds like money to me. It does.
That was the game. You would just say, I hear trumpets. And then sometimes, like if people would, other kids in the neighborhood would come to play with us and they didn't quite understand what we were doing in the same way.
I'm going to bet this didn't happen a bunch where other kids came to play your game.
Can we do
a
little
duck? Taken.
We
would be taken and we would hide in the bushes. And then the other kids would be like, what happened? And we were like, I guess you didn't get raptured.
Yeah. God kidnapped
us. So basically it was, I guess you're going to hell. You're going to hell. Good luck in the tribulation. So basically it's duck, duck, tribulation.
Like it's duck, duck, tribulation. Yes. Actually, that would probably sell. You should go on the dark web somewhere and figure that out.
That's not a testament to growing up in the 80s and 90s in evangelical South.
Yep.
That you're not, you're playing, sometimes you're playing house, sometimes you're playing, you go to hell this Rapture. Time. I'll go to hell this time.
You're like, you're playing dispensation, preacher relation dispensationalism. For us, it was train horns. When we heard a train horn, it was like, like, is that it? Is it coming? Is it happening?
Because you thought it was a literal trumpet.
Like, for real.
You thought it was a literal trumpet would sound.
Yeah.
And I know some of you listening right now are like, is it not a literal trumpet?
It might be. In East Tennessee, a train horn is as close to a trumpet as we got oftentimes. Sure. So I was like, we're assuming God is, you know, iterating upon that idea.
Yeah. John was filling in some blanks too. Like, and I heard a Trump sound. Did he? What did he? What if it was Spotify and he didn't know what Spotify was? I don't know.
He wouldn't know. He wouldn't know. That's great. Okay. Jamie, back to you. Final round. This is your scorebook.
Okay. So I wanted to pick in honor of mass market paperbacks now being off. We're no longer publishing mass market paperbacks. What are we going to put in the grocery store for people to buy? Like, I'm so sad about this. Mm-hmm. I love those little thick little books. By the way, I'll tell you this on Book Talk, Gen Z, they hate hardbacks. Hate them. The avid readers, they do not, they're like, no, why would I buy a hardback? I'll wait and get it when it's on paperback. They do not.
Do they
like
have a reason why?
They just think the money, they just think publishers are greedy and they would rather wait for the paperback anyway. So they're just reading it on an e-reader and then they're waiting to buy the physical copy. And I've noticed a lot of book talkers in their shelves that are behind them, it's always ACOTAR, but it's always the paperbacks. Like, they're not interested in the hardbacks. I'm fascinated by that. But in honor of this, I'm picking a historical romance. I feel like a lot of people don't ever give historical romance a chance. And so I was thinking, what would be the best book of way back in someone's bibliography that I think is great? And it is 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake. First of all, I love that title because I know there are going to be 9 rules that's going to shape up our chapters. I know that we're going to romance a rake. There is no better MMC than a rake. Ah,
that's true.
A rake who maybe runs a gambling hall, maybe, I don't know, secretly, we'll find out what he does. But this is by Sarah McLean. Sarah McLean, she's going to be more in this, like, if you love historical romance, you know who Sarah McLean is. She hosts a podcast called Fated Mates. But she wrote These Summer Storms, which was her first, I greenlit it. These Summer Storms is very succession coded. Someone dies and we all end up in the same rich place to figure out who's getting the inheritance. It's getting adapted. So you'll see more of her. But this was her debut novel. It came out in 2010. This is, we follow Callie. Callie is basically, what I love about this book is that sometimes in these books, it's just, oh, Triss didn't know she was special. And now she knows she's special. But Callie knows she's not special. Like, Callie actually knows. She's like, I'm not special. Like, I'm a spinster. I'm going to be put up on the shelf immediately. I'm disappointing my whole family. And it's not like she's all that. We're like, no, she just needs a guy to stupor so that her glasses fall off. And then she knows because he tells her how great she is. That's why I love this book, because it kind of zigs when you think it's going to zag. And so she kind of just makes a deal with this Marquess and says, hey, will you, his name is Gabriel, and Gabriel helps her find her way and doing, like, going to a gambling hall, skinny dipping, like, doing all these weird things. And what I love is that this doesn't make her a great person. Like, it's sexy because she has agency. This is definitely the 4 Peppers, so that's a heads up. But it feels like a makeover, but it's just her being like, oh, no, this is who I am. I live in a society that doesn't let me pursue the things that I'm interested in or love. And now I can under this protection of a man, which I know feels weird and anti-feminist, but it's not. She has so much agency in this and so many great moments for her as a heroine. And it is, of course, a happily ever after, as every romance should be. And so I like that. And it's so funny. Sarah McLean is a very, very funny writer. A lot of historical romances can feel very dour and just like, oh, no, what are you doing here in my room? And it's like, and I don't know why I do Regency England with a what I call a Bayou accent, but no matter.
Oh, yeah.
But that is what I love about it. And so this is a score. I think if you go back, and then you can read every book Sarah McLean has ever written, as opposed to Kendra's take on Anne Patchett. Mine is the opposite. You can score by reading everything in Sarah's bibliography. So that's my score.
I don't love this cover. Is that controversial?
Listen,
I don't love
to be it. Fair, the dilemma was, this is pre-cartoon covers, right? Now we would just have a cartoon cover of you walking by the Thames and heading to Mayfair and going to a ball. Like, because that's truly how historical romance pivoted to the cartoon cover. Thank you, Emily Henry. But now, back then, it was like, this was what they all looked like. Whereas I prefer a no, you know, I'm hardline. It is a chore to have people on a cover at all. I don't like people on my covers at all for any reason. The back of them, the front of them, the side of them. I don't like people on my covers. So, but this was unfortunately the way. This was the way that
it's
I
fine.
Had to look.
It's fine. Yeah. I would have loved an update. You know, it'd have been okay. I know. Kendra, what's your score book?
So my score book is a book called, I still think about this book. 10 years later, I read, this was one of the first books that I read post college, when all I did was read classics as a kid and in college. And then I was tired of reading about people and families and long sentences. And also that's when Lost came out. And so I was like, oh, well, we're going to do TV now. That sounds fun. So yeah. This book is kind of the book that like sort of got me back into just like fun reading. And I don't know, I don't remember if people talked about it a lot then, but it doesn't have, it has 1,300 reviews on Amazon, which is not very many reviews. But this came out in 2016. It's a book called Jane Steele by Lindsay Fay. It is a reimagining of Jane Eyre as a serial killer, as a heroic serial killer. And so the story is like kind of the same. She grows up with, you know, her aunt and the mean cousin or whatever, and she's sent away to the school, but she also murders people along the way. Yes. And then she finds out, as actual Jane does, that like, oh, her family has died. And so maybe she's going to be the heir. But also there's like a connection between, Mr. Rochester, and it doesn't really matter. Basically, the point is she poses as a governess. She takes this job as a governess to find out if, in fact, this family's wealth is now hers. And then she does fall in love with the guy, trying to steal from him. Should she actually kill him? Will he find out about her own murders? I loved this book so much. And it doesn't even have, like, it's 3.9 on Goodreads, 4.3 on general Amazon or whatever. So it's like reviewed well enough, but it is just like this sneaky book that listen, you guys, I still think about this book. I still like think about how much fun I had reading it and how it was the book that just made me go, well, let's do this. Like, let's start reading books more.
Well, and what a good choice to, if you're going to shift from a classics, like you're going to try something new. What a great model to go with something that has an existing IP that you understand yeah. the beats of, but then it does something different. It's kind of like Lady Tremaine. I loved that book because it's like, I understand the basics of Cinderella and who these people are supposed to be, but this whole new world blows it up in a really interesting, smart way. And that's what this sounds like. So I'm going to add this to my want to read list.
I like the cover. It says reader, comma, I murdered him. I know what this book is.
And apparently Lindsay does this a lot because she has a book that came out a few years ago that was The King of Infinite Space, which is a magical queer feminist take on Hamlet.
Oh, okay.
Listen, one of my favorite types of books is a fairy tale or anything reimagined.
Yeah.
With a little bit of magic and or darkness in there. That's like my favorite sort of thing. So this like it almost feels like this book gets just a special reward because it wasn't just the one that had me want to read more, but it also identified a genre of books that I still to this day love so much. So it just felt like I lucked out on this perfect book that isn't, no one really talks about. So go read Jane Steele. I've never even heard of it.
That's amazing.
Okay. I'll wrap us up here. My score book, this is one, kind of like what you're saying, Kendra, it's stuck with me in a variety of ways. And when I think about it, I only think good things in every single iteration that it's existed. And it is a book I read after college. And it was kind of that same transition period of like, okay, I'm done like with English lit and analyzing weird poems that no one cares about. Like, what's my personality? What do I like? What are books doing these days? And someone had recommended High Fidelity by Nick Hornby. Ah. And I jumped in and I was like, holy cow, this is incredible. And I think in a lot of ways, it felt predictive or foreshadowing of, like, not just my life, but of the culture. If you haven't read it or seen the movie or the TV show, I'll just read the summary from Goodreads. It says, do you know your desert island all-time top five most memorable split ups? Rob does. He keeps a list, in fact. But Laura isn't on it, even though she's just become his latest ex. He's got his life back. He can just do what he wants when he wants, like listen to whatever music he likes, look up the girls that are on the list, and generally behave as if Laura never existed. But Rob finds he can't move on. He's stuck in a really deep groove, and it's called Laura. Soon, Rob's asking himself some big questions about love, life, and why we choose to share ours with the people we do. I don't think that summary does a great job of talking about what works so well about this book. And it's a hangout kind of story with friends at a record store that work together. And they're processing their life, but they're using pop culture to process life. So I think in a lot of ways, it felt like this book kind of presaged podcasting, BuzzFeed listicles, the impulse to try to organize your life either by pop culture or like using pop culture to organize your life. And I think that foreshadowing, like even us talking about it right now, the meta-ness of we're on a podcast talking about chores, horrors, and scores on a book podcast, you know, there's something there. But I like how it really predicts where cultural discourse is going. And I think it's really focused on the central idea and the emotional core of the story is what's starting to matter most about someone is what they like, not what they are like, right? Like the taste in music, that even the taste in like loved ones or romantic interests that they have. And I think one of my favorite parts about the book is it gave birth to two separate adaptations, the John Cusack movie, which is fantastic and a very faithful adaptation of it, in a way that capitalizes on the movie-ness of it, but also is very faithful to the book. It's the best Jack Black I've ever seen. He's so good in the movie. And then the TV show with Zoe Kravitz that was on Hulu for one season. And then I think writer strike and COVID kind of killed any chance of it getting a second season. But that was an incredible adaptation of the book as well. So High Fidelity, Nick Hornby, have you guys read that?
I haven't read High Fidelity. I feel like I've seen so many Nick Hornby movies, though. Like, obviously adaptations, because I forgot that he Fever Pitch is him. It's a memoir.
That's right. Tough movie.
Which is crazy. Tough movie. But you know, I've seen everything Drew Barrymore has been in. But About a Boy. Love About a Boy. Mm-hmm. Like, so good. And then I didn't realize that he also did an education, like the screenplay for an education. Brooklyn, one of my favorite adaptations with Saoirse Ronan. And then he adapted Wild, Cheryl Strait's novel.
I didn't know that.
Memoir. Yeah. Which is how great. Wow. Like, what a gifted... I mean, talk about a writer that you could really pick up anything and love it. But you're right. High Fidelity. Oh, my God. That movie. I mean, the way John Cusack just imprinted on me as a person. Yeah. And I was like, should I work in a record store? Like, I should. Yeah.
You should.
That's how I felt a little bit about Empire Records with Liv Tyler. Yeah. And okay, I haven't read or seen either adaptation. So if I'm going to only choose one, knowing that... I do really love John Cusack, like a lot.
Do John Cusack. Do the John Cusack.
Yeah. That's the one. If I have to choose one, that's what I'm going to do. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You get singing Jack Black, but in a cool way. He's like the kid in grade school that didn't take his ADHD meds. And you're like, all right, we're in for a good day today. Let's go. You know, that's him in the entire movie, but in a good way. But you can check out the TV adaptation too. It's also very excellent. So.
No, I'll pick that one. I only have time for one. And barely that. So I wanted your
You gotta watch out for other mommy. So you got things to do. I get it. You know?
She could be anywhere.
She could. Literally anywhere. She folded under the kitchen
island. She can fold into different shapes, but still keep her head. It's horrible.
Honestly, though, like whoever chose, we're going to run this in front of the Odyssey. That's great marketing. Great job. Everybody had to see that preview. Yeah.
And everybody was like, my kids. I'm like, why are your kids in the Odyssey? Like, also, why that?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that is going to do it for this episode of Shelf Respect.
Okay, Kendra, you are a delight. And for those listening, Kendra is a delight both online and offline. Like, truly. She's one of those people. Because, you know, some people are, like, fake. I don't know if you've heard. But some people are fake online, and they're actually really unenjoyable offline. But that is not the case with Kendra. You can listen to her at the Lazy Genius Podcast, new episodes every Monday. You can subscribe to her free newsletter all about reading called The Book List. We'll include links for these in the show notes. And you can also snag one of her best-selling books, The Lazy Genius Way. Look, The Lazy Genius Way principles are very Nick Hornby coded in terms of creating a life that's like, decide once. Like, there's some Nick Hornby there. You can also get The Lazy Genius Kitchen and The Plan. Buy those at your local indie bookstore or get them at bookshop.org. We'll include links. And as always, don't forget, everything that we talked about is in the show notes. And we would love to see you talk about it too on Instagram at Read With Shelf Respect, or hardbacks. You can chat about it at patreon.com/shelfrespect.
Ask your pointed questions, declare your intentions, or start a respectful fight in the comments with one of your enemies just to eventually become lovers.
I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on the internet at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Nox McCoy. You can find me on the socials at Nox McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.